ignited on the screen so that all we can see it. I think we may start now. I counted. We have six members that are here, which I believe that we are correcting. We are 11 in the committee. So having six members on the platform, it means we are correcting.
Recording in progress.
Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Mr. Kolokiewicz, and your team from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, our support team from the Parliament, invited guests or presenters from the Department of Finance or Treasury, Acting DG and the team, Professor Ramakgopa from the Infrastructure South Africa, and all those that are watching our portfolio committee today, good morning. This is part of the continuation of what we did last week, that of interacting with National Treasury, ESA, so that they can update us on the review of the public-private partnership regulation. I think they came up last week when we were discussing how can we as the portfolio committee play our oversight role when you have these large projects that will be funded through this public-private partnership. And as we know that this PP is on the, its regulations are being amended. So we really would like to be updated. How far is the process and what actually is being amended there? We want to know all this because as this portfolio committee, we have a role to play as we will be doing oversight on Infrastructure South Africa and the department. So us knowing exactly how are the regulations working, it will really assist us, but we can see it clearly when there are red flags, when there are regulations being flouted, and we raise that with the department that we are playing oversight role on. And okay, let's stop the issue that this is our last meeting. We'll discuss that later on. But I want to, again, to all those that are in the meeting and those that are listening, we are in the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence on women and children, which is a serious pandemic in our country. When we look at the statistics, they are seriously bad, if bad or worse is the right word to put it. When the minister was saying that from July to September, 10,000 women or cases were reported for rape. How many more cases were not reported? This is something that all of us as South Africans, we have to play a role in. The heads of department that are here, they need to stand up. We need all to stand in one voice. Suheshe lomkhuba wokuhlukunyezwa kwabantu abangomama nabantwana in our country, in South Africa. In fact, it is said South Africa is the rape country. is not good. Let him alone in this. Stand as a man and say, not in my name. Stand as a man and say, not in my lifetime. Stand as a man and think that it can be your child, it can be your wife, it can be your girlfriend. So I just wanted to pass that message, because each day when you watch the news, you see a woman being raped, you see a woman being killed. So even this infrastructure that we'll be doing, when people are dying left and right, when you have women that are walking cops because they're again the body melanga. But with those few words, I want to welcome you all in this meeting. Can we get apologies, Miss Martinez?
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you. There's no apology from the honourable members of the portfolio committee. The only apology that we have is the one of the Minister of Public Works who's attending a cabinet meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez, for that. I think that it is noted. Over to you, DM, and welcome back in the country. Yes, there is a standing apology of Honorable Hicklin. Ms. Martinez, I think you forgot about that one. Honorable Hicklin is not well. We send our well wishes as the portfolio committee to her, hoping that she will recover speedily. We had an apology last week. I think you did forget. We'll try and check whether can we visit her or send a message to her. She is not well, Honorable members. Honorable Primary, were you going to remind us of that apology?
Yes, I was, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. DM, over to you. We really appreciate the work that you did. Today we saw the office in Cuba, Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Welcome back, DM.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and a very good morning to your good self, to the honorable members of the committee, to the departmental officials, both from Treasury and Public Works, as well as our support team from Parliament. Honorable Chairperson, it's I can't take away what you have just raised around the 16 days of activism. But I must share my joy. I was saying yesterday it has been a day of good feedback for me. Having participated some couple of years back in a petition process, petitioning the court in Nelson Mandela Bay because of a tragic way in which a woman was murdered. And yesterday, which was sentencing of those five culprits who have been given life term sentences, all of them. So I felt at least when it comes to having and feeling and seeing justice being done, for me yesterday it was that good feeling that at least yes, the life of Umama is not going to come back, but the culprits have learned a lesson with the life sentence they got. And indeed, we need to hold hands and work together to fight gender-based violence and ensure that we eradicate it from our society. And each of us has a role to play in doing so. So may I also work at my voice in wishing Honorable Hicklin well in her health, speedy recovery. On the subject matter why we are here, you would understand, Honorable Chair, that in as much as we have come jointly with the National Treasury, yes, we have one presentation, but the weight of that presentation is with the is on the side of National Treasury. We do share from our side a slide which talks to the work we do with respect to the PPP, and therefore here the people who will be leading the delegation, in as much as there is a DDG Kubeka on the platform, but there is also acting the DG on the platform, but the weight of the presentation comes from the National Treasury as a department. But we do understand the importance of bringing certainty to accountability, because that's what Parliament's role is all about. And it is important that the honourable members are clear in terms of accountability, who is responsible for what. That being said, I will hand over. I'm not sure whether Acting DG will lead, but let me indicate up front, Honorable Chair, that both Prof. Ramakoba and Minister are not on the platform. Minister is the cabinet today is fiscal in Cape Town, and she's attending to that. Prof. Ramakoba is holding forth at the Green Hydrogen Investment Conference in where we have the whole world is meeting here in Cape Town, hosted by ISA, which is the responsibility of our department. And therefore, Prof is there holding the fort, but we do have people from ISA. In fact, Mwametsi is with me where I am, together with the team from ISA. We are in one spot at the conference, linking to the meeting. I thought I needed to raise those few apologies myself, and thank you for the opportunity. And both National Treasury and Acting DG will lead the delegation and the contributions. Thank you, Chair.
DM, who's going to present?
It's the team from National Treasury.
Okay.
There is Boitumelo Mashilo from National Treasury, and Dorcas Kayo. They are both from National Treasury.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're waiting for you.
Through you, Chair, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister Kivit, Acting DG Muyemi, and colleagues, a very good morning to you all. Firstly, please accept the apology from the Minister of Finance, Utata Kodongwane, who is also joining the cabinet meeting, the Acting DG of the National Treasury, who is supporting the Minister, as well as the DDG for the Budget Office, under which the PPP review falls under. But we are here talking right now is Bujumelo Mashilo, the head of Infrastructure Advisory Services in the Office of the Minister of Finance. And with me there is Dorcas Kayo, who is the Director for Infrastructure Finance. Dorcas will be the one that will be taking us through the presentation, starting with where we are, why we had to go through the review process, what exactly is changing, as Honorable Chair was saying, where are the changes, why are we effecting the changes, what is it that the market is saying, and so on and so forth. So at this point, Honorable Chair, I would like to hand over to Dorcas, who will also fly the, Dorcas, you can fly the presentation on your side. If not, I think the support personnel from the portfolio committee can help us with that, whichever is simplest from a logistics perspective. Over to you, Dorcas.
Thank you, Butimelo. Good morning, honorable members. And it is indeed a pleasure for us to come here and report on the progress that we have made in the PPP framework review. I will try and share the slide. Some reason, do I have the worst thing so that I can share?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Please let me know when you can see.
We can see now.
It's visible now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So the PPP review, we are going to provide a brief overview, and then we will talk about the objectives of the PPP framework review. We'll also talk about the methodology and the approach that was used. And then another very important aspect was the consultation and validation process. We also provide the key findings and recommendations for the PPP framework review. And this is split into two. There are the findings that relate to Treasury Regulation 16, which covers national and provincial departments and falls under the PFMA. And then there are findings and recommendations for the Municipal PPP Framework Review, which falls under the MFMA. We'll also then highlight the observations that are coming through and also provide a way forward in how the recommendations are being implemented. Now, when we look at the PPP, the situation as it stands now, 34 PPPs were closed to date, and 28 of these projects were actually prior to 2007, although this means that because they've got a long implementation period, you actually find that some of them are still in implementation. But we see a decline in the number of new PPPs. And when you look at the statistics, 19 of the 34 closed the PPPs. They were actually closed before Treasury Regulation 16 was amended and the introduction of the standardized PPP provisions, which were issued in 2004. when we look in rand terms, we see that South Africa had an estimated 10.7 billion in PPP transactions between 2011 and 2012. But this has significantly declined since then to 4.8 billion in 2017-18. And as you can see, this is quite a significant decline. So the average project size of the PPPs that have been developed is around 1.1 billion. And of course, this is outside the two large transactions like the Gautrain and the Gauteng Freeway. Now, when we look at some of the factors which we think contributed to the early successes, I think one of them was the political leadership and the championing of PPPs from the minister, excuse me, from the then Minister of Finance. But also, PPPs also flourish in a good economic environment. And therefore, we see that generally the overall global and regional economic sectors were positive and conducive to the development of PPPs. And also the market appetite and the capacity to develop PPPs then, it also includes a largely quite active project finance market. So it was initially a very good operational environment for the PPPs. When we look at the current pipeline, it includes 22 projects with 9 projects at various stages of procurement. And actually, these numbers have gone up since the review. Now, when we talk about regulation of PPPs, it's very important to understand that the PPPs that fall under the PFMA, that is the national and the provincial, they are regulated in terms of approvals that are given at different stages. And then when we look at municipal PPPs, the National Treasury does not give approvals. The approvals are given by councils, but we provide Treasury views and recommendations. So when we look at the approval stages, we have when a PPP is registered, that's the initial step. When it's registered, then the project sponsor then does a feasibility study. And to do the feasibility study, because of the complexity of how it's done, project sponsors hire transaction advisors to help them to do the feasibility study. And when the feasibility study is completed, it's submitted to National Treasury for consideration. If it falls under Regulation 16, then it is considered and given Treasury Approval 1. And if it's a municipality, we give views and recommendations. So the purpose of Treasury Approval 1 really is really to check whether the feasibility meets the requirements of a PPP project. And when we are talking about the PPP projects, there are 3 criteria which must be met for a feasibility to have met the requirements. And this criteria is that it must be affordable to the municipality or the department. The second thing is it must provide value for money for government. And the third thing is that it must provide significant risk transfer from government to the private sector, because then the private sector would be able to better manage the risk and reduce the cost of the project. So that is when the approvals are being given, through all the stages, we are checking for those 3 tests. Is it affordable, the value for money, and does it provide significant risk transfer? And then there's Treasury Approval 2 2A and 2B, the project will now be preparing the procurement documentation. If it's a request for proposals, if it's a request for qualification, they prepare the documentation, they submit it for approval. And then they go into the procurement process, they issue it to the market, they receive the bids, they adjudicate, and then they prepare a value for money report, which is the treasury approval 2B. And it will be to check and approve the bids prior to the appointment of the preferred bidder. So at that point, we are making sure that what we had in the feasibility study and we moved through procurement, the requirements are still being met. And then lastly, the last approval, which is treasury approval 3, which is to check documentation prior to the approval of contract signature. And once this is done, then the project goes into implementation. On the municipal side, we are also giving the relevant treasury views and recommendations. And I must say, although we don't give approvals, these views and recommendations are taken quite seriously by municipalities, and they consider the comments that treasury would have given. Why are these approvals necessary? It's because triple P's are very complex. One, you want to make sure that the department, the municipality, is not shortchanged in the negotiations. We want to make sure that they are getting their value for money, and we assist in that respect. The other aspect also is that there are contingent liabilities, in that when we sign, when the contract signature is signed, the government gives a guarantee that should the department fail to pay, then Treasury will come in and make good. So it's very important that we also track these contingent liabilities, because if anything happens during the process and the contract is cancelled for some reason, then Treasury needs to pay up the difference. So it's very important, because these guarantees are given at a national level for the PFMA, that we also track the contingent liabilities and fiscal risks that come with this. Now, when we look at why did we do the review of the triple P framework, the first was the objective of the review was to address the concerns, the perceptions and criticisms that were raised around triple P's, with the hope that once we addressed these concerns, then there would be an increase in triple P's and crowding in of private sector funding. I think it goes without saying, honorable members, that this is one of the key windows through which the private sector comes in to invest in government projects. And also to highlight that at this point, given the infrastructure built that government envisages, government cannot do it alone. We also need the private sector to come in strongly in providing the financing. Another reason was to better understand the challenges, the bottlenecks, and to provide stakeholders with an opportunity to validate the draft recommendations before they were fully adopted. I'll talk about this a bit later when I go into the methodology that we used, because it was very important that we validate whatever was coming out and make sure we were addressing the concerns. The review also considers lessons learned from the application of the current triple P framework over the past years, and also the experience of other select countries. We did look at a number of other countries and how we compare, such as the United Kingdom, Australia, Chile, India, Canada, the Republic of Korea, and Jordan. Those were the countries that we also started during the review. And then another objective was to present key findings on the current triple P policy, legal, regulatory and institutional environment, and also to present the targeted recommendations on how to address the identified gaps and also the challenges. So the review of the PPPs, I think it's important to note that it is also part of the broader infrastructure reforms, which are meant to increase the infrastructure investments that pull together the resources by the public and private sector. And also to highlight that when it comes to blended finance projects where government is putting in some funds to de-risk the projects and then we expect the private sector to come in, the infrastructure fund announced by the president also, which is now operational, also offers this opportunity for increased partnership between government and the private sector with the objective of boosting investment and also contributing to economic growth. The methodology that we used in undertaking the PPP framework review, it first of all included a desktop review of the PPP rules and regulation, in other words, the municipal framework and its regulations and Treasury Regulation 16, its relation to the PSMA, the PPP standardized provisions, and also the experience which we have had in closed PPPs, because what happens is once the PPP is closed, they write a report on the experience. So this desktop review was looking at that. And then we also had a stakeholder consultation and validation process. So we had two streams of work here. One was public consultation with the public sector. And then we also had consultation with the private sector. And we also had consultation with PPP practitioners who have actually been doing this. So this stakeholder consultation was very important to understand what they saw as the issues, the problems. And then when we got that and then we went and worked on the review, and where there were clear recommendations that were coming out, we again did a validation process to say, this is what you said at the beginning, this is what has come out, can we have your comments? So there was those validation workshops at the end. And then, like I also indicated, we also looked at international best practices and benchmarked how South Africa does against these other countries. And then also a review of the South African PPP experience. I think I have talked about that already. So this is the methodology that we used in the consultation process. And then the National Treasury in the Budget Office, which is where the regulatory functions of PPP lies, also appointed a reference committee to act as a sounding board for the PPP framework review. And this reference group, it comprised of public and private sector PPP practitioners, including representatives of the government technical advisory center. Actually, the PPP advisory unit lies in GTEC, and they also played a very key role in the reference committee by making sure what was coming out was what could be validated. And then we also had the Development Bank of Southern Africa, and we also have the Gauteng Management Agency. As you know, this is where the Gautrain is run from, the Gauteng Management Agency. And then we also have Independent Power Producers Office, which we're also making, which was also part of the reference committee. And then we had the Department of International Relations, DECO, and we had representatives of leading financial and legal firms advising on PPP projects in South Africa. So this reference committee was very important in that whatever was coming out, they would then look at it and advise the best way to move forward. Now, when we look at the findings, what came out of the review, and we must also remember that this review is critical in that since 2004 there has been no review of this framework, and yet the economic environment has significantly changed. So it was really opportune that we carried out this review. So on the policy framework, this is one of the key findings that came out, that South Africa lacks an overarching infrastructure policy framework that can mainstream PPPs into the overall planning process for public investments in a fiscally prudent way. And what this means is that when PPPs are being done, it's kind of demand driven. A municipality wants to do a PPP, they register a province, a national department. We don't have this overarching policy where we can say these are the strategic sectors where we want infrastructure projects to come from, and there's a way of mainstreaming them and making sure that these are the right kind of investments that we want, and then ensuring that when this planning process is taking place is done in a fiscally prudent way, in that we can track the risks and the contingent liabilities that come through the process. So we are saying that there isn't this central overarching infrastructure policy framework. The second finding was on the legal and regulatory framework. I took time to explain the number of approvals that are currently being given, and the finding that came out is that there are multiple approvals, and there is also inadequate coverage of important aspects in the PPP legal and regulatory framework, and this needed to be addressed. Another issue was on the institutional arrangements and accountability. So there's a lack of a centralized approach and a gateway body to screen infrastructure investments for PPP suitability. So this is actually linked to the policy framework, in that you'd need a central gateway body that would then screen the suitability, because I think I indicated at the beginning that the feasibility studies are done by transaction advisors, and this comes at a cost. And you want to make sure that you are spending money on a project that is suitable. So this is what this point is saying, that we would need that gateway body to screen infrastructure investments for PPP suitability. And then PPP capacity was another findings, that there's a lack of capacity at various government levels. So within the regulatory function in the National Treasury, which does not have sufficient numbers of dedicated staff, the PPP advisory unit in GTEC, which also needs more resources to be able to do its function effectively, and then procuring institutions, those municipalities, provinces, national departments, which put together these PPPs. And this is what we are calling procurement institutions. They also lack skills and expertise in PPPs. And then the PPP processes, that the existing PPP processes, and I'll talk about this in more detail later on, that the processes are rigid and cumbersome as they are not calibrated to project size or project type. So what this is meaning is that you have the Gautrain, which is a huge project, and the requirements which we would place on it. And then we could have a smaller project. The requirements are the same. So they are saying the finding is that the requirements should be fitted to project size to project size. But the overall recommendation was that overall the review findings indicated that there is no need for a complete overhaul of the PPP legal and regulatory framework, as there are good aspects that compare well with international benchmarks. However, critical gaps and challenges that need to be addressed and improved were also identified. Recommendations include legislative changes to improve the PPP value chain and improve the application and practice, which is expected to yield more reliable results and generate more confidence in the implementation of PPPs. So I'll just maybe now want to elaborate on the recommendations that came out. And because this is where the crux of the issue is, and also honorable members were talking about what needs to be done now and how does it move forward. So in looking at the recommendations, and they are short-term recommendations which can be done in a period of 6 months, and then there are medium-term recommendations which can be done in a period of 12 months, and then there are longer-term recommendations which can be done over 2 years or so. So the first thing, like the first action plan, or I would say a recommendation, is on the policy framework that we need to develop a triple P policy framework that mainstreams these triple P's. And as you know, the development of a policy will take long, probably a year, if not a little bit more. And then the other finding was on the legal and regulatory framework. So amendments to Treasury Regulation 16 approvals. That was one of the recommendations. So we are saying low value projects which are below a certain threshold will be exempted from Treasury approval 2A and 2B. This is the procurement. And with this recommendation, the PPP unit in GTEC would play an important role in assisting procuring institutions to do the procurement process. So there would be no need to then give this low-value project national treasury approvals. And then also to amend clause 16.8 to remove references then to treasury approval 2A and 2B approvals. Then the legislation would have to change to indicate that. And then also to then, for the remaining approvals, to then give clear time frames by which they would be processed. But it's also important to notice that for large value projects, the approvals and views and recommendations will also remain. But this is for projects below a certain threshold. And then inclusion of additional elements, where we were saying that there are certain elements which are lacking and should be included. One of them has to do with the unsolicited proposals. Unsolicited proposals is when the private sector initiates or proposes a project. It's not the department, it's not the municipality. So there are no clear guidelines. There's a general guideline that is there, but it doesn't specifically address PPPs. So one of the recommendations was that we need to come up with a guideline for unsolicited other thing was the delineation of roles of key institutions. In other words, the Fiscal Liabilities Committee in the National Treasury plays a very critical role in following through these fiscal risks and contingent liabilities. So it's very important that their role is strengthened and clearly outlined. The other issue was on the financing support mechanism for PPP. So this is a very important point. When you see the decline of PPPs around 2015-2017, one thing you also realize is that there was the process of cutting departmental baseline also took a little bit of traction during that period. And for affordability to get the affordability test right, a department must have funds in their baselines that illustrate that they can afford the PPP. So if they cannot afford that, then there is a problem. So this financing support mechanism, the recommendation is that they should be a clean support mechanism so that PPPs are affordable to departments. So this is one of the key recommendations, and it envisaged that it can be addressed in the short term. And then also revision of the exemption provision. So the regulator has got the prerogative to exempt certain PPPs from approval. But the issue was that once an institution is exempted, for example, the Sunfax is an example where they are very good at doing their PPPs and we give them exemptions. But the important thing is that they should be monitoring to make sure that once you give exemptions, we follow through. So the revision of the exemption provision is one of the ideas that was put on the legal and regulatory framework. And then the other thing was also accountability of accounting officers. So the problem here is that there is arbitrary abandonment of projects that will, for example, that are going through procurement and then accounting officers just stop the project and you don't understand because it will have met all the requirements. So they should be firming up of the accountability of accounting officers once a PPP has met the requirements. Because a lot of money has gone into the preparation, in the procurement process, into the bid documents, and then suddenly a project is abandoned. So, and it also affects the market perception of PPPs. And then the other thing was, which is a bit in the long term, is the alignment between the PPPFA and the PPP code. And the recommendation here was if PPPs could be exempted from the PPPFA. But I think this is an ongoing discussion. It's not exactly the responsibility of the National Treasury. Discussions have to take place with the DTI. Now I move on to institutional arrangements and accountability. One of the things was the centralized project identification. You know where we said we need a gateway body that would then screen these projects. So the recommendation was that there should be a centralized gateway body to screen all proposals that come through. And that they should be supporting documentation like screening templates. And another aspect on this was also the consideration of provincial level infrastructure funding agencies. For example, the Gauteng province is already has one GIFA. So thinking around that area for all provinces. And then that there should also be a dedicated PPP regulator, that there should be a dedicated chief directorate there should be guidelines for their operations, and that there should be tools, methodologies, and templates to follow through the fiscal risk. And then the another area was improving the procurement institution's performance. So it's very important that the procuring institutions, they appoint a full-time project officer who should be at a high level, for example, at chief director level. In that the PPP unit, I think I've mentioned this before, that they play a critical role in intervening and assisting in the packaging of this project, and also making sure that they are ready to be submitted to the regulator for approval. And then also an incentive structure to encourage the procuring institution teams to develop quickly their project. And then lastly, this recommendation that they should be transforming the PPP center in GTEC into a center of excellence. And I think if honorable members remember, or if they looked at the budget for 2022, there's already work which is being undertaken in this area. So the importance for this PPP Center of Excellence to add capacity in numbers, in skills, and also in sector expertise, and then also to define the roles and responsibilities of the staff, and also to define proper processes of how they engage with the procuring institutions. So if I come back to the procuring institutions on the accountability measures, there's also that need to assign a senior official at a minister level to serve as an official who championed PPPs, and also the need to establish an infrastructure forum that will make sure that we are keeping track of what is happening, and maybe it can be a learning experience as well of sharing our knowledge. And then for large projects, let's say for example, the Caltrain, that there should also be an independent monitor to make sure those projects are going well. And then on the PPP processes, the recommendation was that at the project inception phase, that for these large projects with ripple effects over the economy, perhaps there should be a pre-feasibility study for projects above a certain threshold, so that we are really seeing its desirability, and then it can move to the feasibility studies and so on. And then also at the project feasibility phase, right now what we do when we are assessing the value for money is that we compare, if government were to do this project on their own, how much would it cost? If it were going to be done by the private sector on our behalf, how would it cost? So there are methodologies that we use to do that. And these methodologies, they compare the risks that are passed from the private sector from the public sector to the private sector, and there are methodologies that are done there. So it's recommending that those methodologies, they need to be refined and make sure that they are easier to implement, easier to understand, but at the same time making sure that we get the information that we need to ensure that there's value for money. And then on the procurement phase, there is also the recommendation that there should be a one-stage bidding process based on size and project complexity. Here, what we are saying is that, for example, you have the request for qualification, you have the request for proposals, just lumping those two processes into one, so that you have a one-stage bidding process. But this will apply to projects of a certain size and projects that are not that complex. So this is one of the recommendations that has come up, and that also there should be a non-negotiable draft PPP agreement when they submit the request for proposals. So when it goes to the market and the bidders are looking at it and they make their markings, we are saying that once that's done, that becomes non-negotiable, and then it moves into the signing stage. And then looking also, and this is a key area, contract and exit management. So the issue here is that a procuring institution must have the expertise to manage the contract with the private sector. And if a department is not able to manage that contract, then what you then say is that those risks which would have been passed to the private sector, if we are not making the private sector accountable, they can be passed back. So it's very important that a procuring institution has a very strong contract management function. And on this, we are saying that perhaps the term of transaction advisors be extended till the project is implemented to assist the procurement institution, and that there should be proactive intervention by the PPP unit, for example, in assisting with the documentation, making sure that whatever they don't understand, they beef up the expertise and skills. This is why this Center of Excellence is also very key. And then to make sure that there is the exit plan and that it should be part of the PPP agreement. So I really want to talk about this exit plan, because what you find is that, let's say, for example, we have the Gautrain. It's coming to an end in March 2026, the concession agreement. It means that we must have already have started working on the exit strategy. How does the Gautrain move forward after March 2026? So if this is not planned for, then you find that procuring institutions, they come time and time again and say we want to extend the contract. So it's very important. And then once you extend the contract twice, three times, then there are issues around whether this is fair, whether this is competitive. So this is a very key recommendation that came out. And then the training that there's need for specialized training for procurement institutions for issues such as project readiness, this unsolicited proposals, value for money, the negotiation, contract management, and so on. And then the last bit is that once we have changed everything, like I've indicated, then the sector-specific toolkits must also be changed, and the PPP unit, the Center of Excellence, will help in then developing sector-specific toolkits and standardized provisions. And then we move on to the municipal side. So one of the findings was that there are overlaps in the legal framework for PPPs and public consultation. There are laborious requirements for the Treasury's use and recommendations, and also inadequate coverage of important aspects in the PPP framework. So I won't go much into detail, because some of these things are very similar with what I have already said. So the current institutional arrangements are not adequate due to a lack of capacity at various government levels, as I have indicated. So delays in the PPP project cycle on the municipal side, again, is talking to the same issues of having a dedicated regulator, the absence of adequate operational guidelines, and the need for prescribed frameworks. We, time frames within which the Treasury views and recommendations can be given. And then the Triple P unit, that it can also is unable to catalyze a robust municipal Triple P pipeline or to proactively support municipal Triple Ps in the identification process and preparation. And also the fact that most municipalities, they are ill-equipped to identify, to prepare, and to implement Triple Ps. They need a lot of support. And therefore, this recommendation on the Triple P champion at a higher level of government to promote and support Triple Ps as an alternative funding mechanism was strongly recommended. And then there is a training that happens at the DBSA, but we are saying this training has not been adequate in addressing the significant areas that municipalities need support in. And then I'm also going to talk about additional aspects that have been added to the municipal recommendation. So when we look at the municipal Triple P framework, and these recommendations for municipalities, they were considered for not in the short term because of the nature of municipalities, but it was envisaged that it would take a year to 2 years to implement the recommendations on the municipal side. So one of the things was the need to simplify and rationalize the legal and regulatory framework. And you find that, again, amendments to the Treasury views and recommendations are talking to the simplifying the procurement for low-level risk projects, and then also establishing clear time frame. And then another key issue is around the rationalization of public participation requirements, making sure that it's not laborious, it doesn't take long, and that during the feasibility study is adequately covered. As you know, there are also consultations with organized labor, and that this should be managed in a better way so that it's not protracted, and that there will be no further consultation prior to the Triple P contract signature. And again, there are those recommendations on additional elements such as on this unsolicited proposals. This is actually a key issue for municipalities because they cannot handle these unsolicited proposals, and they are requiring a lot of support in this area. So coming up with that guideline will really help. And then the other thing is on the alignment between the Triple PFA, and then strengthening the institutional arrangements and market engagement, again equipping the National Treasury for the Triple P oversight and monitoring, the role of the Triple P as a center of excellence, and then also improving the performance of the procuring institutions and making sure that we add capacity and numbers so that market engagement measures are very effective. And I think one of the things was that there should be a dedicated institution to support procuring institutions so that they could play a proactive role in assisting municipalities. And then also ongoing training is a key issue. And then another area was in strengthening the processes in the Triple P, in the municipal Triple P manual, and it touches on a number of areas at the inception level, at the project feasibility study, at procurement, again at contract and exit management, and then specific toolkits that would be needed at the municipal level to guide the better implementation of Triple P. Now, when you look at, I talked about the additional recommendations for the Triple P framework review in the municipal space. So here we are talking about amendments to the Municipal Systems Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act, and there are details on how we could collapse certain sections into a single requirement at the feasibility stage, how we can reduce public consultation requirements to one formal public consultation process in particular instances, and then also how to reduce the labor consultation to a single consultation, and revision to certain sections of the Municipal Systems Act to remove impediments to processes that inhibit Triple P's. And then another area is issuing directives to address a number of areas, like the external mechanism, the interpretation of the application of the Municipal Systems Act in the case of priority use cases. And when it's referring to priority use cases, it's saying areas such as water and sanitation, such as water treatment works, and other very key areas, that we should concentrate on those areas and make sure that we assist municipalities to do that. And then there's also the dedicated institution and champion to support the procuring institutions. I've already talked about that. And I think another additional area was the need to lobby support and to develop advocacy materials, and also to develop fit for purpose documents and templates for priority programs, and to build a conducive environment and trust by creating a balance of competencies of both parties to the Triple P contract. This is a very important aspect in that when it comes to negotiation of the Triple P contract or the concession agreement, you need officials on the public sector and the private sector to be balanced in terms of skills. Otherwise, if the private sector is stronger, then the public sector feels everything at the table is being taken away from them, and then there's lack of trust. So this is what this is saying, that there should be a conducive environment that creates a balance of competencies and trust. Now, the observations, one of the observations is that policy and systematic recommendations that came out, and this is through our validation processes, that these were strongly supported. For example, this public investment management system that mainstreams Triple P policy, this was strongly supported that it should be implemented as soon as possible. And then the importance of also building institutional and systematic links with the Infrastructure South Africa and the Infrastructure Fund in these processes, because as we know, ISA is building the pipeline, the Infrastructure Fund is also looking at blended finance, from which some of these projects can also be Triple P's. So it's very important that we forge the right links between these. And we also had there was also a lot of consultation with ISA, who provided invaluable inputs into this process. And then there's also the mainstreaming of Triple P's in a fiscally prudent manner, ensuring that the fiscal commitment and contingent liabilities management is effected, because this is a pipeline that is can potentially come up with very serious risks to the fiscal framework, so it's very important that it be managed prudently. And then the lack of funding for Triple P is making sure that there are financing support mechanisms for the, there's a framework for doing this. And then self-sustainable facility for project preparation funding. As I indicated that this transaction advisor feasibility studies come at a cost, so it's very important that there is a sustainable facility for funding the project preparation phase. And then also ensuring that in building the project pipeline, skills and institutional capacity, and we also have a capable transactional service. You know, because the pipeline was going down, it also affects the availability of transaction advisors because it is demand driven. If they see that there isn't demand, then they put their skills elsewhere. So it's very important that the transaction advisory service also scales up to provide the necessary skills, and then additional requirements that have been enumerated in the municipal space have been identified and also need to be implemented. Now, when we look at the way forward, there were necessary administrative processes within the National Treasuries, the memo signaling the intention to change the regulations, and all the necessary approvals have been granted. As I was referring, we actually published all these findings and recommendations in the February budget review, and implementation has already started. So the ongoing processes include ensuring that there is alignment between these regulations and the primary legislation, which would be the Public Procurement Bill, and then also following the necessary steps in changing the regulations, areas where we are changing the regulations. We are working very closely with the PFMA units in the National Treasury, as well as the MFMA units, to make sure that we follow the necessary steps. And this is already in motion in how we change the legislation. And then also, we were advised by both the PFMA and the municipal section, the National Treasury, that there would be a need for a further consultation once we have finished with the areas that need to be changed, that there would be a further consultation that is required. Once all the changes have been incorporated, then the legislation kicks in. So in terms of the processes, we have also been advised when we need to come to Parliament with the legislations, and we are following through those processes. Another thing that we have done is also we have a Triple P review project document. In other words, we have now projectized the implementation of these recommendations, and we do have a work plan where we are saying that these are short-term recommendations which we have already started to do. This will be 12 months, this will be so on. And then we say for each work plan, these are the resources that are required, these are the people who will lead, because this is a huge reform. There are areas where National Treasury can lead, but there are other areas where GTEC, for example, would need to lead. There is also the liaison that we need with ESA in the implementation of this. And there's also the role of the private sector, especially when we start reviewing our manuals. We also need the assistance in the actually changing and writing of the manuals. There's also been, I think, overwhelming support, I must say, in the private sector also coming forward and saying, are there aspects we can assist, as well as DFIs, where they've said, where we can assist, please let us know. May they can can provide expertise, they can also provide financial resources. So with those remarks, Chair, can I hand over back to you? Thank you.
Thank you so much for this presentation, which is detailed, and I think you did justice to it. Some of the things that when we read it, we didn't understand, you gave flesh on those points. Any other additions? Boitumelo, so that we invite honorable members to raise questions and comments, or maybe the department. Any other additions?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think that takes us to the end of the presentation, and let me thank Dorcas for that splendid presentation. We will now be in a position to take questions, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. As much as the request was that the National Treasury, the ESA, and that what is it? IIO investment. But again, I've heard some of even including Ms. Dorcas, when she introduced herself, is part of that investment, whatever. So we were expecting maybe three presentations, but I believe that this one presentation encompasses all. I will then now invite honorable members to interact with the presentation. Honorable Frank Kalvik, Honorable Sam Mare. Honorable Fanskarvek and Honorable Zamare, in that order, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to Honorable Chairperson, our members of the Portfolio Committee, DM, and the team, as well as our staff in our meeting. I would like to start by welcoming the presentation that has been made, Chairperson. Many of the things I find very interesting, although there's some clarity seeking questions that I need to check on. Chairperson, I would like to know, when talking about the review of the PPP that's taking place, would that be inside the National Treasury or in the Presidency? Exactly where is that going to take place? Also, who is going to be responsible for doing this review? National Treasury alone, or the Presidency, or business partners? And when did the review start? How long is it going to take? And how much is being spent on this review? And is there sufficient resources to conduct this review? Then I want to know what results emerge from the review, specifically with regards to the strategic infrastructure development method that ESA, National Treasury, and DBSA has used for the strategic infrastructure projects. And then, Chairperson, I also want to know whether the PPP review process include the movement of staff between the Presidency, ESA, and DBSA. That's my questions in terms of that, Chairperson. And the other thing, Chairperson, is with regards to the decline in the number of PPP since 2007. What led to this decline, and what is the impact of that decline in terms of this mandate? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to pause there.
Thank you, Honorable Sanskalvi, Honorable Kramare.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm sitting in a guest house in Craddock, so please just advise if my signal's not very good. I'm hoping that it's okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. I appreciate it was very detailed, and it's exciting to see that we're looking at new ways of bringing government and private sector into partnership. And I agree that I don't think government is in a position to carry the mandate alone. So I think this is an excellent initiative. And there are just a couple of issues that I have or questions that I have. One of those is who is going to drive the changes to the legislation? Will that be done through the executive authority, through the Minister of Finance? Will it be done through COGTA, because some of it's Municipal Systems Act and MFMA? So who's going to drive the legislative amendments and the amendments to the regulatory framework that will give municipalities, provincial governments and national governments the opportunity to engage in these triple Ps? And then what are the projected timeframes for that? Because, I mean, the changes to legislation can take some time. And coupled with that, you spoke about... towards the end of the presentation, you spoke about I can't remember, there's three columns. I should have made a note of the three columns. But in the middle column, you spoke about amendments to BEE and MSN, MSA in terms of interpretations that could be applied pending the amendment of legislation. So I'm very concerned that we are using expedience to justify departure from legislation, and I would like clarity on that, please. In other words, on what basis will you be interpreting existing legislation to support the PPP process prior to the amendment of legislation? Then the other thing I would like to highlight that I think is fantastic is the idea around unsolicited proposals. I know certainly at a municipal level, they won't even look at unsolicited bids because they don't comply with the MFMA. And I think it's really, really important that we start using initiatives from private corporations, companies, individuals who have got good ideas that can support government's mandate. So I really do think that this is something that needs to be taken and run with, and that a proper framework gets established for those USPs. I am concerned that we seem to be creating again a whole new layer of funding or funding requirements in terms of new units and where are those going to be located, because that wasn't clarified. So you're talking about new PPP units or departments. Those will require work or people to run them. And those are not unskilled labour positions. So again, we're not necessarily addressing unemployment because we are using skilled people at high salaries. So there's going to be quite a high cost implication around establishing new units and new departments around these triple Ps. As well as the infrastructure funding agencies at provincial level. I mean, we've got, you know, development agencies at municipal levels, and not all of them have worked very well. And it seems to just be a black hole of funding. And most of the funding that they raise seems to fund those agencies as opposed to actually being used for the work that they're supposed to be doing. There are very few of them that have succeeded. So I'm worried that we're going to be now creating these agencies, and funding that should be used for infrastructure development is going to be paying salaries of people driving these agencies. So that is a concern for me. And then also you've got these your TAs, which are your transaction advisors. If you've now got TAs on these projects, how does that relate then to consultants? Because I'm deeply concerned that we spend a lot of money on consultants. And often you will look, if you look at the DPWR project, you have consultants that are appointed 2 to 5 years before the first, spadeful of the earth is turned. And post completion, you're still paying consultants on projects. So these consultants' terms are 10 years on a five-year project, and now we're adding another layer of consultancy in, you know, but with a new name as a transaction advisor. So I'm concerned that we're almost duplicating responsibilities around transaction advisors and consultants, and with that needs to be looked into so that it isn't a duplication. I think that was, and then also just with respect to the PPP review project document, will we be able to get regular updates on that implementation? Will we be able to see what that document looks like so that we can look at the timelines, and also the roles and responsibilities of those who are tasked with dealing with that review? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Honorable Tring.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just maybe just two questions. First is the concern raised that where you have the triple P projects starting, and then kind of midway, halfway through the project, you know, you have the project ceasing for whatever reason. So perhaps if clarification could be given in terms of some of those projects where there is any experience or information available, what has caused some of those particular projects to be cancelled midway with huge amounts of investments, early investments, initial investments going in? So it is a concern that you have some possible loopholes where you have this investment going into the PPP investment projects, and then they are terminated kind of midway. So what are the reasons that you found for that, and what are the systems that are then going to be put in place to ensure that you don't have these particular projects being terminated midway? So that's the first question. So it's a concern. The second is just with regards to what is actually needed for infrastructure development, just in terms as a comparison to our GDP. So it's in 2008, 2009, our infrastructure investment was at 6.05 to 7.64%, okay? That's 2008, 2009, respectively. And then what happened was there seemed to have been a decline in terms of that investment of about 2.91%. Which is below the investment rate of some 7 to 9% as recommended by the World Bank. Now you've also indicated that there seems to have been a decline in the partnerships, PPP investment projects. So with this particular decline in the investment projects and the need in terms of the World Bank, that our, in terms where South Africa is, there's, we should actually be having a 7 to 9% investment rate in terms of 7 to 9% GDP investment rate, but we are falling far short of that. So again, what are the mechanisms that are to be put in place to ensure that we have this investment of between 7 to 9% of GDP, infrastructure investment of some 7 to 9% of GDP. You know, GDP currently, I think, is sitting at about just over five trillion. So if you look at 10% GDP, that would kind of give us the ball mark. So are we aiming at that 7 to 9% infrastructure investment as recommended by the World Bank? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tring. Thank you, Honorable Members, for your input and your questions. Just a comment from me, not necessarily a question. in aiding my voice and appreciating this presentation, and also supporting what my colleagues raised. The issue of amending the MFMA, I think as someone who has been in that level of EE government, I think it's a good thing. The MFMA, it prohibits a lot of innovations and initiatives as far as infrastructure is concerned, especially in those small municipalities that would really, really need this investment or funding through EPPs. That issue of addressing the unsolicited bids, I think it is a very, very, very good initiative. I hope that it sees the light of the day. My comment or question, if I may put it as that way, I am worried about the time that it takes for a project that is going to be funded through PPP to take off. Looking at all these stages that are being followed, and knowing fully well that we have a lot of backlog, I think it takes time. As much as I've seen that in the amendments that you are proposing or recommending, especially at the municipal level, that you reduce labor consultation, you reduce public consultation, revise Section 78. I think that would at least fast-track some of this. But to me, it really takes time. A project maybe that has been targeted, that it may start in 2022, it may, in fact, through this PPP funding, it may start in 2025, if you look at the stages that are being followed. So I don't know how then can you work on that in these new regulations that you come in with. Lastly, Honorable Graham raised an issue of creating now another agency on top of the many agencies that we had. PPP has been there before, and you even gave us the statistics that there were so many projects that were done in as much as such an investment that was put in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, and then it reduced. Why now bringing in an agency other than using what is already there? Because you have so many agencies within National Treasury. You have ISA, which is not an agency. Yeah, it is an agency. But why do we now go bring in a new one? I think you need to relook at that one, because it will also delay the whole process that has to be followed if you are going to have another agency brought in for it. So I think we must at least deal away with that one, use the current agency that we have, but you ensure that they are compliant to the new regulations of the PPPE. Thank you. Over to you, National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for all the questions that have come through. I'll try my best to try and address the issues that have been raised by Honourable Members. but perhaps if I can start with the issues that you raised, Chair, and then I'll go to the other questions if you allow me to do that. Chair, thank you very much for the support. You indicated on the need for amending the regulations in the municipal space. When you look at the findings that have come out from the review, you actually see that the way the municipal regulations have been made was not very conducive or facilitative to the building of triple pits. It was more like a discouragement, actually. So there are a lot of these inhibitions which we need to correct. And you are very right in saying it's a good thing that we want to change the legislation to make it more conducive for the building of triple pits. And you also raised a very important concern with the time scale with which we do triple P. So there are two aspects. There is the development of the feasibility studies itself, and then there is then the approval process. Now, what can we do on the making sure that the feasibility studies are done quickly? One is a skills thing. You need the expertise, because if a feasibility study is submitted prematurely, then it's pushed back with a lot of gaps that need to be addressed. So that's one of the things, to make sure that we skill, we capacitate the procuring institutions so that they are able to package this. And even if they go to a transaction advisor to help them, they also need to be a competent client, which is one of the troublesome things that you see. A consultant, and by the way, I was using this word, consultants and transaction advisors, interchangeably, and I realized it might have confused. So these transaction advisors, let me just use those words, are the ones who assist departments and municipalities to do the feasibility study, to prepare the procurement documentation, and to also help in drafting the concession agreement. That's the work that they do. And what we are saying is we would then need also the department, the municipality, to be able to talk to these documents. When we, for example, as National Treasury, we call them to a meeting to discuss, then we find it's only the consultant talking to the document that is concerned. So to speed up the process, we need to scale up our skills at the municipal, provincial level, and we also need very good transaction advisors who are charging these fees maybe at reasonable prices. And then the other issue you raised was around whether we are creating another agency. Why a new one? What we are doing here, maybe let me explain it a little bit better. What we are doing is that we have got the triple P unit, which sits in the government technical advisory component in GTEC. And this triple P unit has always been there. It is the one that offers the advisory capacity. It works closely. There is also even a project development facility to assist. So they've got a number of home bodies that actually work with provinces, municipalities to package, to help them, to interpret what the GAs would have done. And then we have got the regulatory function, and it's very important that we don't mix the advisory and the regulatory function because of the sensitivity around triple P's. If you mesh the two together, then you can invite a lot of corruption in these two areas. So the decision was to separate the two. So the regulatory function sits in the National Treasury. Now, what are we saying? We are not saying let's establish a new institution. No, we are saying the triple P unit that we have, let's convert this into a more effective function as a center of excellence for triple P's. And then we equip it the necessary skills, the necessary numbers, the capacity that they need to help procuring institutions. So I hope I have cleared that, that it's not a new institution, but it's equipping and capacitating an existing institution, broadening its scope so that it's more capable to carry out the advisory function for triple P. Now, if I can go to the first question. There were a number of questions, and I hope I've managed to capture them well, honorable members. The first one was, where is this review taking place? Where is it seated? Is it inside the National Treasury or the President? Now, I hope in trying to explain that the National Treasury does the regulatory function. So it's in charge of coming up with these regulations for triple P's. They fall under the Minister of Finance, the regulation of triple P's Treasury Regulation 16. Of the PFMA. So that regulation, it falls under there. But then, what we are talking about is that there are other functions. For example, we are talking about the policy. And the policy would involve the ESA, for example, and the work they are doing in building the pipeline. This is why when I came towards the end, I was talking about the interfaces that must be built and the work when we are talking about the policy. This will have to be a joint initiative where we are working together. When we are talking about the gateway, a one-way gateway where triple P's are mainstream, you see that ESA can play a very important role in that. So this, in coming up with the policy, this is where we are classifying these interlinkages, interfaces, as well as the responsibilities, who will do what. So that policy will clarify those things. And then there was also a question about how much has been spent. But maybe before I come to that, there was a related question on the review and the strategic infrastructure project. So you see, when we say we need a kind of gateway where triple P's are not looked in isolation, because this is what is happening at the moment. Triple P's have their own way of moving. What we are saying, they must come through one gateway. They are prioritized. And we are satisfied that these are the right things. And the strategic infrastructure project, the way it has been happening now is that it hasn't been linked to the triple P's. So what we are trying to do is make sure that we link all this so that they come through one channel, and that policy will clarify those things. And then how much has been spent? When this review was initiated by the National Treasury, and we looked for funding to undertake the review, we were given a grant by the World Bank to undertake this review. So from a budgeting point of view, we have not used any funding of our own, what we have used is this grant that we received to do the review. And then the movement of staff, there is not going to be movement like of staff between the institutions, in other words, the regulatory role, the PPP unit, the work that ESA is doing. But I think what's going to happen is the beefing up of the skills, capacity, the capacitation of the institution, the clarity of the role, so that each one is able to effectively carry out its role. And then on the decline of PPP, and the reasons behind it, I think one of the things is that coming out of the hardship after 2009 and then going forward, and then also the economic situation, like I said, the affordability of PPPs, it must be shown on the by the municipal budget, by the Department of Baseline. And one of the reasons, in my view, is that this affordability issue, in other words, if budgets are going down or are being cut, then the disposable finances that departments have, when we do the affordability test, then we find we have a lot of PPPs, but they failed the affordability test. So there is need then to address that, which is why there is the finding that there must be financing support mechanisms that address the affordability of PPPs. If I can move to the second honorable member, who raised a number of issues, and one of the questions was who is going to drive the legislation amendment and the in the legislative framework. So I tried to explain that when we look at the current legislation, in other words, Treasury Regulation 16 and the municipal PPP regulations, you find that in the National Treasury, we have the municipal desk, which looks at any changes in legislation. And then we also have the PFMA desk, which looks at changes in legislation. So what we have discussed with them and said, this is what has come out. And then they have told us that if you want to change legislation, these are the steps you go through. But then in changing that legislation, we consult with all the relevant stakeholders that are affected by that legislation. So that's how it takes place. But it will be driven from the National Treasury, where there are two components, us who are saying this is what we want to change, and those who say then if this is what you want to change, this is how you go about it, this is how you consult, this is how you do things. And then in terms of timelines, I tried when I was presenting to say that there are those short term, which we can do like in 6 months, but there are also those that can take a year and those that can take 2 years. And I think there was a very good question that said that since we have projectized this and say there are 1, 2, 3, 4 work streams, how do you see them? How do you monitor them? So our intention is then through the budget review to always report on the progress we are making, where we are, and the timings that are attached to each of the work streams. And I think there was also the very important question that there would be resources that would be required to drive this. Where will those resources come from? So we are looking at those resource implications. And like I said, there are so many stakeholders we have come along who want to assist, including the private sector itself. Although we need to be careful that sometimes you cannot change a legislation that directly affects you. So there's that sensitivity that we need. So the new structure that we are building up and what it will take, I think the question would be the new capacity, the numbers, the expertise. And the Honorable Member was very right in that you need highly skilled people to do this type of work, and it will come at a cost. So we will look at the cost implications in making sure that all the role players, for example, in ESA, in GTEC, in the regulatory function, are well equipped and trained to be able to do their functions, and there will be a cost to this which needs to be met. And I think maybe this is the next step in the resourcing and how we will do it. And then there was another comment on the infrastructure funding agencies. So this has been an area of discussion where we are saying, do these infrastructure funding agencies, let's say in Gauteng, in Limpopo, in KZN, is that really the right approach? So that's a recommendation, but I think its feasibility, it needs to be explored further, whether it can really work for every province, or maybe there should be national ways of addressing this. So that is a very good point, I think, which I have also noted that it needs to be addressed. And then there was the issue about transaction advisors. I think I tried to explain this. In the PPP space, we talk of transaction advisors, and this is the equivalent of consultants. So it's not like you have transaction advisors, then you have consultants. No, it's one and the same thing when we are looking at the PPP space, so there's no duplication there. So the like I said, on the PPP project review that we will be reporting in the budget review documents, there was also a question on the BEE. This was referring in the municipal space, the recommendations that have come through have gone actually at a faster pace, if I might say, in that they are saying, let's have what would I call pilots, but they are saying, they are calling them use cases. In other words, for example, if you want to do triple P's, let me take the example of desalination, for example. And municipalities don't know how to do that in a cost-effective way. So how do you package such a thing? Can we then dedicate resources that shows them how to do it, that come up with standardized documents that make sure that the participation of stakeholders such as BEE partners also comes in strongly? Because as you know, in a PPP, we are looking at the special purpose vehicle and how they'll be subcontracting to the BEEs. So we want the best to have examples which can then be used to replicate, standardize, and make sure it happens quickly. And then there was the question from the Honorable Member about the PPP projects and the abandonment of projects, the projects that are cancelled midway. And indeed, this is a concern for all of us, I would presume. So there are examples where this has happened. For example, in the health sector, there were about, I think, 6 projects, triple P's in 2012 that were at the procurement stage and they were abandoned. But I'm glad to say I think they are coming back again, although the disadvantage is that when a infrastructure project comes back, it always comes back at a higher cost. So the what the recommendations are saying is that how do we hold accounting officer accountable once a project has met all the requirements, it's moving forward rightly, and we don't see a rationale for pushing it back. How can we hold accounting officers then accountable for this? So the recommendations are looking at how this can be done. And then I think the Honourable Member also raised a very important point, but maybe it's related to what we call the gross capital formation. In other words, what does government contribute? What does the private sector contribute to the capital build? And how much do we need for our economy to grow at the right rate? So what we have seen is that indeed this has been declining, like the Honourable Member indicated. This has been declining, and the economic situation, COVID and all this also worsened the situation. So the question is, how do we resuscitate the infrastructure spending so that it can stimulate growth? I think this is the point the Honourable Member is referring to, that we need to make sure that infrastructure begins to stimulate growth to the right levels. So I must point out that we need the private sector to come in strongly. Usually when you look at the history on the gross fixed capital formation, it is the private sector that's actually contributing more than government. And we want this to continue like this, which is why the PPP is the window through which the private sector can come in at scale. And we are saying, why don't we clear the way with the right controls for them to come in at scale, and then they help government to scale up infrastructure investment. Now, there are two areas. There is this PPP, but there's also the infrastructure fund, which comes with blended finance projects. So which is why I said the PPP is part of the broader reforms. But Honourable Members, I would also like to say that it's also very important for us to understand that outside of the PPPs, outside of the infrastructure fund, there is also, I think last year when we look at the budgets, there was over 800 billion on the baseline of national departments, provincial departments, municipalities, in terms of the budgets which they also have for infrastructure. So we shouldn't lose sight of that there is also this side which is trying to stimulate infrastructure development. I don't know, Butimelo, if you would like to get on any of the points that I have answered. I might have overlooked one or two issues. Thank you.
Thanks, Dorcas, and through you, Honourable Chair. I think you've answered most of the questions, and what I can do is emphasize a few points, and maybe starting with where you ended off. The point on our side is that the National Development Plan talks about the fact that infrastructure spending, in other words, gross fixed capital formation, needs to reach 30% of GDP. This is what we follow as the threshold that we need to reach as a country. And it actually goes further and says of the 30%, 20% should be private sector and the 10% should be the public sector. And I think it was Honourable Member Tring who was making the point. So we don't follow what the World Bank prescribes. We follow what is in the National Development Plan. But whether you look at it from an NDP or any other perspective, the fact is
population is low. At the moment, I think we are sitting at less than, I think in 2021, we were sitting at about 4% of GDP, and private investment was sitting at close to 10%. So however you look at it, we were almost sitting as a country at about half of what we require. And part of the reason why we are doing this review is, having observed the market and you know, a point that there's a lot more that we could be doing with the assistance of the private sector in terms of financing, in terms of capacity, as well as you know, discipline and expertise that we have, we then instituted this review. And I think there was a specific question around, when did it start? It started in September 2019. I mean, the end date is as Dorcas was indicating. So we started this process with a view that at the end we need to be spending a lot more as a country in terms of our infrastructure investments, and this is why we are doing what we are doing. And this is also linked to the point that has been raised by several members around capacity, you know, and capability. And to us, it's about the step change that is actually required in terms of both the quality and quantity of infrastructure investments that we want to see. Given that we are at a very low base right now, and we want to ramp up that base to a very high level, it means that our capacity and our capability needs to be able to match that. And this is why when we talk about the triple P unit, we're not creating anything new. We are just saying that our capacity and capability needs to be built. When you look at the regulator, we are saying the same thing. When you are looking at the sponsoring institutions or the departments, municipalities, and entities that are undertaking the PPPs, we are also recommending, well, there's also a recommendation around how they need to be capacitated. And part of it is also around the risk that actually reside with the triple P projects. And because I know that sometimes there's a view that says you are over-regulating the triple Ps when you are leaving a whole range of other projects that don't follow the Treasury Regulation 16. And without necessarily commenting on whether it's over-regulation or not, I just want to highlight that there are quite specific fiscal risks and contingent liabilities that come with triple Ps. And this is why triple Ps have to go through such a rigorous process of making sure that government is able to anticipate the risks, is able to put the contingent liabilities on its balance sheet, but it's also making sure that the risk allocation is optimal, right? And I mean, outside of the triple P space, similar processes are sort of underway, just so that you know, the triple P space is not seen to be held to higher standards compared to the non-triple P process. So, Chair, in fact, there was another comment around the review methodology. I think it was from Honorable Member Van Schalkwyk. So here, I mean, the triple P review is not necessarily about methodologies. Unlike last week when we were talking about the 5Ks model, there was a reference made to the BFI guidelines and the like. In this case, we are not necessarily talking about those issues. What we are saying is that at a higher level, at a legislative level, at a policy level, at a operating level, there are certain issues that have to be resolved. And to the extent that some of these recommendations have an impact on the triple P manual, as an example, what we are trying to do is to align, you know, as we've been trying to do with everything else that we are doing. So this is not necessarily about the methodologies that will be used in as far as Triple P's are concerned. It's really about how do we create a conducive environment for Triple P's to actually thrive where they are desirable and where, you know, there is a case for such projects to be done in this particular procurement method. And that's where I would like to sort of leave it as emphasis over and above what Dorcas has said. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Boyce Melo and Ms. Dorcas, on your responses and your comments on what we have said and the honourable members have said. I'm not sure whether are there any follow-up or whether DM or acting DG, you want to have some words. DM?
No, thanks, Chair. I think acting DG will start, but having looked at the responses and listening to the questions versus the responses, one is fairly comfortable that all the areas that were raised by the honourable members have been attended to, and if there would be an area, it would be just an area of emphasis, even from the acting DG. But from my side, it would just be to appeal, not necessarily to the committee, but to both Treasury and our department, because the methodology of triple P's has the potential to propel infrastructure development faster, quicker, if properly managed and properly supported. But also, it will help transform the demographics, the patterns of ownership, as well as it becomes a win-win situation for both the public as well as the private sector. So for me, kind of trying to ensure that we speed up whatever review of legislation that we would want to do will help us move faster in the right direction. But I don't want to close out our activity. Let me afford him the opportunity. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, GM. Over to you, acting DG. I think acting DG just joined the meeting, but is actually in that program that is in ICT. On those at GM, let me again, on behalf of the Portfolio Committee, appreciate this presentation. It is shedding some light and it is also going to assist us in applying our minds when we have to do oversight on projects that are funded through Triple P. And also, especially when it comes to ISA, and it will also assist us in explaining further, even though to those that don't understand how triple P's work and why it is advantageous. It will really, really assist, especially
the amendment of the MFMA, it will really, really assist us. I'm saying this as someone who has been in that space and someone who I know when the issue of triple P's came in, we wanted to go that route, but we couldn't as a small municipality. But we, because of all the rules and regulations of MFMA that prohibit, especially when you talk of unsolicited bids. I want to say this, while the National Treasurer is still here and before we go for our looking at the minutes of the previous meeting, it has been a pleasure and a tough time working with you this year. A year not so easy with all the challenges that are in the department, and we're not happy as the portfolio committee, especially on the role played by GPSA. I want to raise this because as the portfolio committee, GPSA is not part of those entities that we can call and make it to account with the role that GPSA is playing on the telecom towers. I think when we visited that project to do oversight, a second visit since 2019 when we went there, seeing that no progress has been made and knowing fully well that GPSA is an implementing agent, we're not happy. We want to raise it. Yes, that National Treasury is here, we've raised it with the department, but we want to raise it while National Treasury is here. The way that GPSA is lacking on that project, we're not happy as the portfolio committee. So I think you need to look at that. You need to review how GPSA is working on that project. I don't know how many projects GPSA is implementing and lacking so behind in those projects. Thank you, DM, and all the teams that are here for this information that will assist us moving forward. We'll then have to move to our second item in which we are dealing with the minutes of the previous meeting. Ms. Martinez, can you then fly to those minutes on our screen? Thank you. You may be released, National Treasury, and not DM. But I think you left it. DM, I want to raise this with you. As the portfolio committee, we are seeing so many projects that are being done by the department. I think we did raise this with you previously, but as the portfolio committee, we're not getting any invitations. I think you need to look at this with the minister. I understand you were not here in the last 2 weeks or in the last week, but we saw pictures of you in Queenstown having a project. We see that every day. And today, Infrastructure South Africa is hosting a program. The department is there. Not a single member of the portfolio committee is representing this portfolio committee. We're not happy with that. We have discussed it amongst ourselves, but I want to raise it here with you in this platform that as the portfolio committee, I think you need to sit with Minister, Acting DG. We must not just see, because if we are caught by media as the portfolio committee, there is this program. We won't be able to say anything because we know nothing about those projects. Thank you, DM. Honourable Member?
No. Can I? Just 1 second, because it will not be correct if we just leave on that note. Let me first take the responsibility and apologize profusely to the honourable members. I will have to go and check where the mishap, what caused it, and we will go and discuss as the leadership of the department to find a way that we communicate in a manner that does not exclude the portfolio committee. My humble apologies for what has already happened, but I want to commit that will work to ensure that it doesn't recur. My apologies.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Nola?
Thank you, Chairperson. The minutes that... Sorry, Chair?
Yes, continue, my dear.
All right, thank you. The minutes that are before the Committee for Consideration and Adoption are the minutes of a meeting that was held last week, the 23rd of November, where the committee received a briefing from the DPWI, DPSA, and the National Treasury on the working relationship regarding the infrastructure funds.
Thank you.
I see the Honourable Grandma Ray has raised her hand.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Ms. Martinez. I don't know whether, is this proper to include the DDSA there? Because I don't even remember it being told on the delegation that this is one from DDSA. We only had those that were coming from Infrastructure South Africa, which is part of the department, and National Treasury. We never heard of anyone coming from DPSA. I think we must remove that one. Honorable Kramare?
Chair, I've got a couple of corrections, if I may, please.
Okay. Over to you.
Thank you. On page 2, under presentation, the next paragraph under that, it says the committee welcomed the presentation. If you go to the end of that line, the second line, you'll see it says of the three agencies. I think that should be three. Have you got that?
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, I'm looking at my screen and I've got the other one minimized, so I'm battling to see what you're doing. And then... on the next page, the big paragraph, you'll see 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth line down, it starts off, structures were developed inside government, it should be departments.
Done.
And then 2 lines down from that, right at the start, it says funding. So the Infrastructure Investment Office was established to review projects and funding, and then there's a comment, it says ESA inside the DPWI. I think that should be a new sentence, starting with ESA. All right, the third last line of that paragraph, the first word is infrastructure projects. Then you'll see it says one such project that was used should be as an example.
I'm not sure I follow Honourable Graham.
The line starts with infrastructure projects. Then the next sentence says one such project that was used should be as an example. You need to just include an was the infrastructure project. Do you get what I'm saying? So between as an example.
I've got it, yes.
Okay, cool. Then 2 paragraphs down starts off a key part of how the IF it should be is being managed.
Which paragraph is that, sorry?
The second last paragraph on that page. It starts off with a key part.
Okay, got it.
Okay, of the IF is being managed. And not as. And then as such. And with those changes, I'm happy to propose the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray. I also have been looking at you, Ms. Martinez, correcting all these small errors that have been raised by Honourable Graham Murray, just grammatical errors. Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray. Can we then, Honourable Members, get a seconder on that motion that we adopted this minute as a true reflection of what we discussed in the last meeting? Honourable Members, can I get a second, please? Honourable Van Skalbeek, Honourable Jobo.
absence of any other member, Chairperson, I will second the proposal.
Thank you, Honorable Van Skalwijk, for seconding that motion. The minutes have thus been adopted with all the corrections that have been made. Honorable members, we have come to the end of this term, the end of the year 2022, which was not an easy year for our country. We have seen a lot of things happening. As this portfolio committee, we have tried all our best to ensure that we play our oversight role in the department, and also extending our oversight role and inviting a presentation from National Treasury and all these other entities that are working with our infrastructure ISA, infrastructure agency. It's part of us ensuring that we do understand even the fine line that will be written in that project, so that we play our oversight role in a correct manner. I really appreciate all the work that you have done when we were out on oversight, when we are in the portfolio committee discussing, asking questions and commenting. It is really a great pleasure working with you, but also honorable members, I think if there were have been awards in this sixth parliament, I think this committee would have gotten an award. It's one of the committees that would never see people shouting at each other. We may differ even when we ask questions. We may differ even when we see things. But at the end of the day, we work in a way that ensures that we play our oversight role for the benefit of all the South Africans that ensure that we are in Parliament. So let's keep the spirit when we go out for the festive season, hoping that we'll have an enjoyable, merry Christmas, and 2023 will bring the prosperity to us and our families. Honorable members, we have members that are not well. Honorable Hicklin, we send a message to her that she must recover speedily from what is ailing her. And also, honorable members, our colleague advisor, Mr. Shue, also is not well. We also sent her a message that he must stay strong and fight and ensure that he recovers from his illness. Our secretary, Ms. Adisha, is also not well. Yes, she is working. She is here in the meeting today, but in the next few days she will be having an off. We also give her strength and words of comfort that her off will be successful, and when we come back next year, she will be part of our meeting stronger than before, ensuring that she won't be having any sickness after that that off. To you all, have a great time, and to those that will be attending the ANC National Conference in December, all the best to what you want, but ensuring that the ANC comes stronger and more united in that conference. Thank you, honorable members. Do we have any announcements, Ms. Martinez?
Nothing from my side, Chair. Just that the following term program will follow as soon as we get the focus areas from the House Chairperson. Then the men could sit and decide on what items should go into the program. Then members will be informed of such a program. Thank you, Chair.
And honourable members, on your behalf, I have asked Nola to look at us doing some oversight visit in one of the countries, preferable overseas countries. Remember, the department is owning some properties there, and it is proper that we ensure that we see those properties. It's
something that we're working on. We will inform you in due course, but we're working on requesting from House Chair to allow this portfolio committee to have that one visit next year. To our 18, you have been so superb. You have always supported us, Shu'e, Inel, Ms. Martinez, Tabi. You have always been with us. We really appreciate you, our 18. We may not say so, but we really appreciate you. The fact that this committee is so strong is because of the work that you are doing behind the scenes. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Chair. And everybody have a good Christmas and New Year.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.